Here we're joined today by my colleague Alyssa Imprevento, who's the program officer working with me on the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. I am Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder, program manager here at IIE CIS. And we're joined today by David Levin, who's the senior program manager for various programs, including Scholar in Residence program, over at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the United States Department of State, who is the sponsor of the Fulbright program, very importantly. So we're going to be bringing to you an overview of what the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program is. We will be also including some programmatic insight from the State Department perspective as far as trends within the program, as far as number of grants that are awarded per year, and just different insights in general into the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. Then we'll be talking about the application components. We have a large variety of tools and resources available to institutions who are looking to apply for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. So we will be taking some time to outline what those tools might be. If there's some time, we'll get onto the Fulbright Scholar in Residence landing page of the CIS website to kind of bring this all together for you. So we're hoping that it'll be an informative time. Approximately in 1 hour, we're going to be together talking about the program itself. We're also going to highlight other opportunities that are available through the Fulbright program for your institution, and we'll be addressing your questions in due time. So if you do have questions throughout the webinar, feel free to type those into the question box, which is in the webinar GoToMeeting module. And then once we get to the portion of the webinar that is addressing the questions, then we'll have a lineup of questions ready to discuss at that point. All right. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Alyssa, who's going to give you the general overview of the Scholar in Residence program.
Hi, everyone. So the Scholar in Residence program is a wonderful opportunity to bring scholars and faculty members from overseas to campuses that don't often have the opportunity to host visiting scholars and or serve underrepresented audiences. So it's a really wonderful opportunity to internationalize your campus and to really create an exchange going forward. So the SIR grantees primarily teach undergraduate courses for either a semester or a full academic year, and it provides a cross-cultural and international perspective for the campus. The application is made by the interested U.S. institution, and as I mentioned, it's for either one semester or a full academic year. So the application is now open. It opened in March, and the deadline is October 16th. And we've also listed our email here in case you have any questions as you go through the application. Okay. So this is just a list of the institutions served by SIR, the sort of priority institutions that we look for to submit applications. So really priority goes to institutions that have infrequently or never hosted a visiting scholar on their campus and or serve underrepresented audiences. So that could be American Indian, Alaskan, Native serving institutions, Asian American and Native American, Pacific Islander serving institutions, Hispanic-serving institutions, historically black colleges and universities, predominantly black institutions, community colleges, and small liberal arts colleges. We also encourage rural colleges and universities to apply, and institutions are welcome to partner with other institutions in their area and submit a joint proposal. Okay, so some of the program benefits of the Scholar in Residence program. It's a wonderful opportunity for the host institution to gain new knowledge, to offer new courses. The scholars' collaborative relationship with the host institution and colleagues in country results in continued dialogue and exchange, potentially with the scholars' home institution overseas. And the experience is beneficial for the scholar as well, as it impacts their field, their career, their home institution, and their home community. So the hope for outcomes and impact are internationalizing the campus and curriculum, creating an education abroad program, potentially virtual exchange and online courses, MOU initiatives, et cetera. And this is just a little bit of a breakdown of the proportion of institutions served by SIR. So the largest ones that we tend to see have been small, liberal arts colleges and community colleges.
David, if you could kind of highlight some trends that you've seen as far as the institution types, it's very important to note that we do also have institutions that may not fall within our preferred institution list that have applied, but maybe through means of partnering with other institutions. I know that we've had some differences in institution types and maybe the rate of success of some of those institution types.
Sure. So I think, as Alyssa said, if you look at historically, we've done very well with community colleges and small liberal arts colleges. The other groups, which may be sort of a larger category of the minority serving institution types, usually do very well with HBCUs. Hispanic serving institutions are newer to the program in terms of numbers, but we see an increase there. We also see predominantly black institutions getting some foothold, as well as some Asian serving institutions. Not as many Native American serving as we would like, and in fact, very few tribal colleges, even though we're reaching out to them as well. But we're looking at ways that schools can be creative, perhaps partnering between two or more of these kinds of institutions, and looking at ways that both might benefit. We also see partners between a small school, small or large school, for example, and a majority-serving school have partnered. So the various ways to get engaged, even if you have less experience than you think you might have.
Thank you. Now, as far as what the application entails, we do have several components within the application. So I'll be highlighting the application form itself and what we're looking for there, and then we'll move on to the real meat of the proposal, which happens to be the narrative proposal, and kind of outline for you what's included there. It's always really highly recommended at the point at which you're considering applying for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program to actually start an application. So going into, and we'll include links later, going into the EMBARC system and starting an application so you can get a sense for what we would be looking for in those components. And I would also encourage taking a look at our Fulbright Scholar in Residence guidelines to get a more in-depth look into what the different components of the application form and the narrative proposal entail. And we've included there as much as possible some of the kind of ways to lead you toward what we're looking for in terms of the different sections. So as far as the application form goes, it's fairly straightforward. Within the application form, you would be outlining information about your institution and how you plan to or what contacts you plan to have through the application through having a scholar in residence on your campus. So the first item here is, the first area of the application form would include outlining what your institution is, where you're located, including your address and so forth, and you'll also be able to include information if you fall within one of the minority-serving institution types there. And then you're outlining on your campus a responsible administrative official, and this would be someone on campus that could sign off on any affiliation information. So depending on your institution, this could range from a chair of your particular program to a dean of a school to a provost to somebody from your international office or perhaps your finance office or HR. So we really defer to your institution as far as how it's made up and to determine who would be the appropriate individual to sign off on any of those academic arrangements. And then we're looking for a principal contact for academic arrangements, or in our kind of wording, we use the term faculty associate. So this would be the day-to-day contact for the scholar. So we want to make sure that somebody on campus would ensure that the scholar was taken care of on a day-to-day basis. This would be perhaps somebody from the specific department who's applying for the program that could kind of provide that guidance to the scholar throughout the period of time that they're on their grant. You would be outlining your program dates. So for the upcoming application cycle, we work pretty far in advance. We're collecting applications for the 2018-2019 academic year. So you do have time to make those kind of arrangements and plans. So be sure when you're outlining what the program dates are that they would fall within the 18-19 academic year. You also would outline any financial support here. These would be estimates of any cost share. We'll talk a little bit more about the cost share later on in the webinar, but you would be providing the estimates, kind of round numbers in this section of the application form. You would also outline here if you were planning to name a scholar or recruit a scholar from up to two different countries within the world region. If you're looking to name a specific scholar, you would use this section to outline the biographical information of the scholar as much as you may know. We will be using this, if your application is successful, we'll be using this to contact our colleagues abroad to ask them to assist us in contacting the scholars, so accuracy is really greatly needed here. If you're requesting recruitment of a scholar, you can use this space. There's a section to name up to two different countries within the same world region that you would like to undertake recruitment for your particular project. And then there's the proposal summary. It's 700 characters in length. This is a required field on the actual application. This gives our reviewers a sense of, in a snapshot, what your program entails. So you'll, of course, have in the narrative proposal the time and space to outline in great detail as far as the specifics of the project, but we would like to get a sense of, you know, kind of in a short form, what your project entails through the proposal summary. All right, and then moving on to the narrative proposal. So the narrative proposal is divided into two different sections. The first part of the narrative proposal includes the institutional profile information. So for a single institution application, this on average would be about 4 to 5 pages in length. And if you were providing a joint proposal, this would include about 7 to 8 pages in length. And that's just because you're outlining all of this information for both of the institutions in that space. So generally speaking, this particular section is what assists us on the program side as well as our reviewers to get a sense of what your institutional characteristics are like. So when our reviewers are reading through the applications, you know, they may or may not be aware of your particular institution, but we would like to gain insight into what the makeup of your campus is, so what the size and characteristics of your student body as well as your faculty might entail, where you're located, what your mission statement is, and we're curious to hear what the scope of your academic offerings entail, as well as any community resources that might be in your area. What types of current international programs or initiatives are currently on campus? Maybe you have hosted visiting scholars in some capacity in the past, whether through through the Fulbright program or through some other type of program. You can outline some of those engagements here. If you have a thriving study, currently have a thriving or you know, active study abroad program on campus, you can outline that there as well. If you've had visits from visiting faculty maybe for a short-term basis, you might outline that in that section as well. And what are your institution's short and long-term internationalization goals and objectives? So what are you hoping to gain, generally speaking, through your internationalization efforts, and how specifically would having a scholar in residence on your campus fit into these short and long-term internationalization plans? David, do you have anything to add about the first part of the narrative proposal?
No, I think the more that you can give us a sense of your institution, what your objectives are, how you see NSAR fitting into your plans, you know, be creative. One of the questions that always comes up is, if I've got a lot of experience, could I still do SIR? And the answer is yes. Well, we'd like to see you expand what you've already got in terms of internationalization. So if you've got a program in place, think about ways that you could enhance that, perhaps in a different country, add a new subject area, you know, something that enhances what you've already got in place.
Mm-hmm. All right. So on to the second part of the narrative proposal, which is actually really the meat of the scholar-in-residence proposal, because this is what relates directly to what you're trying to accomplish through having a visiting scholar onto your campus. So in the first section, we call it the oversight section. In saying oversight, it basically would be addressing who on your campus would be doing what when working with a scholar who's coming to visit for a semester or full academic year. So, you know, you have two already. You've outlined your responsible administrative officials. So you might talk about where they may interact with the scholar. You have the faculty associate who is going to be working with the scholar. Perhaps you have someone in other departments on campus who might be engaging with the scholar in some way or have some kind of responsibility related to the scholar's time while on campus. Just outlining all of those individual contacts. So this space isn't really used to sort of provide us with a CV or kind of background of those individuals. We just really are very curious to hear what they may be doing for the scholar while they're on campus. And then you have the academic program of the scholar, obviously the most important element of the entire application. So what exactly will the scholar be teaching while they're on campus? So how many courses per semester would they be teaching? What particular courses or what kind of specialization background might be required to enhance those courses? What kind of qualifications or experience might you be looking for to teach those particular courses? That would be included in the academic program of the scholar section. We often get a question about how many courses a scholar might teach when they come on campus. We probably see on average about two courses per semester. It really depends. Sometimes a scholar would be teaching an existing course but providing international insights into that curriculum. Other times they may be creating a whole new course that's not already on the books. So highlighting or explaining the type of course would be helpful in that regard for the reviewers, too, because that also shows the kind of type of preparation that the scholar might be undergoing in order to undertake those activities. And then you would outline any plans for other campus activities. So through the Scholar in Residence program, the SIR would be coming onto your campus and would really be interacting with various areas on campus. So they're not really just staying in one department or just one area. So perhaps you would be planning for the scholar to give a public lecture about their home country, or maybe they would be making kind of guest lecturing appearances into different disciplinary background courses. So outlining what else they might be doing while they're on your campus. Another unique component of the Scholar in Residence program entails community involvement or community outreach activities. So when the scholar is visiting your institution, you might have community partners in your area that would be interested in inviting the scholar to come and talk about their home country or talk about their specific specialization. We've had scholars in the past who have made visits to high schools in the area to teach about their particular topic or, again, talk about their home country and really bring their home countries to your communities. It's a unique opportunity to have somebody, a visiting scholar, on your campus, so really thinking about ways that you can kind of maximize the interaction of the scholar while they're in your particular area. Outlining anything regarding professional enrichment, so if you are planning to include the scholar in any faculty meetings that you might be having, during the school year, during the academic year. Oftentimes you might have orientations for new faculty. Maybe including the scholar in residence there would be a good source of faculty development. Or if anyone in your department might be attending an academic conference, you may find a way to take the scholar along with that particular individual to provide that professional enrichment opportunity. The next component would be regarding sustainability, so kind of focusing in on how how you would sustain the scholar's time even after they've left. So if the scholar is introducing new curriculum or helping to build a program, how would that particular course or program continue on after the scholar's visit onto campus? So Alyssa talked earlier about some of the outcomes or benefits, so sometimes this might include creating an exchange program for your students and or your faculty. This might include kind of creating different online courses or virtual exchange opportunities. The list could go on and on. David, you may have some other examples of sustainability and what might make a strong sustainability portion.
I think we've heard everything from online classes to MOUs signed between the home and host school, so that, that while your SIR is teaching, you may build out that experience and you might end up with student exchanges. We've had exchanges of different kinds of materials with a home and host museum on a campus. We've seen activities engaging different kinds of community organizations between the home and host cities. We've seen some business activities, the Chamber of Commerce set up or enhanced between the schools, your city and your scholar's home city. So there's various ways that, that people have built upon that experience involving this, you know, your scholar and the home and host communities.
And we definitely always learn new ones just from the proposals that come through, too. So really think creatively about ways that you can maximize that time that the scholar is on campus and how that can kind of continue on afterwards. So then the duration of the grant period, you outline the proposed dates in the application form, but this may also, in this very short section of the narrative proposal, you might outline, you know, if you're requesting that the scholar come early, say, for an orientation or something along those lines, or just to assist them in getting acclimated once they arrive, you can outline some of that information there, but just so that we're clear about when your semester dates are and things like that. And then as far as financial support, we touched a little bit about that. So this is where you would take those dollars and cents that you might have included in the application form and expand areas of what cost share you might be able to provide. So to be very clear, cost share is encouraged. We encourage institutions to think through ways that they can provide cost share, but this won't make or break your application, and you won't be disqualified if you're unable to provide some form of cost share. So the cost share can come through means of a salary supplement, so if you're offering some sort of cash support to the scholar, and or it could be through means of in-kind support. So we're asking institutions to at least think creatively through ways that they can offer some form of in-kind support. We've seen institutions who have offered to include the scholar on their meal plan on campus. Some institutions are able to provide housing or to defray the cost of housing. Some institutions provide transportation. You know, if there's a bus in your area or something that the scholar could use, perhaps providing them with a bus pass. I have heard of institutions who allow the scholars to audit whatever class they would like to, given the time that they might have, to devote to those kinds of activities, to sort of play toward the professional development element or the professional enrichment element, but also to kind of provide that in your cost share package. And so you'd be sort of providing an estimate of what those particular areas of in-kind support might be valued at, and then you can outline that here as well as in the application form. Any insights from you, David, about the
No, I think there's some good examples. We've also seen some cases where there's been travel money provided where the scholar might go to a workshop or a scholarly conference related to their area of specialization, maybe along with host faculty. We've seen people getting memberships to the local museums, various ways that you think would be beneficial to the scholar to enhance their experience, both academically and professionally. But as Cecilia said, this is not a make-or-break kind of thing. We'd like to think creatively on what you could provide. But if you said what's the typical provision, we've seen everything from $0 to $50,000 and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then the next area of the so we finished kind of the narrative proposal portion. And now we, in the application and the proposal, would like to hear a bit more about the scholar that you're looking for. So we talked about two separate tracks that you can go on through the scholar in residence program. So you do have the option of naming a specific scholar. And in the case where you're naming a scholar, perhaps one of your faculty members met a scholar, an international scholar, at an academic conference and wanted to find a way to bring them onto your campus for an extended period of time. You are able to name that particular scholar in your proposal. So if you're naming that particular scholar in the narrative proposal, we're asking that you outline why that particular scholar would be the best person to undertake your particular grant. So how that, you know, and you're pretty much building your proposal around the expertise of that particular individual, so that's kind of speaking to that. But we want to get a sense of why that scholar would be the best to undertake your activities. But we're asking that you submit also a CV as well as two letters of recommendation. So these two letters of recommendation, of the two letters of recommendation, one would be coming from someone who could speak to the scholar's teaching ability. So given that the scholars would be coming on your campus to primarily undertake teaching activities, we want to make sure that they would be a good fit in that regard as far as the scope of the academic program that you're looking to, if they've had experience teaching within that particular discipline or specialization, as well as, you know, making sure that they have the required English skills that would be needed to teach that particular topic on your campus. If you don't have any contacts already and you would like to request recruitment of a scholar, that's perfectly fine, and we do welcome those applications as well. So you would be choosing up to two different countries within the same world region. In the guidelines as well as on our website, we do have the different world regions. We have countries listed within those world regions. And we do, you know, have most countries in the world that would be engaging with the Scholar in Residence program. If for some reason you don't see the country of interest for you on that list, definitely reach out to myself, reach out to Alyssa as well, and we can talk through whether or not that might be possible to engage with that kind of country or with that particular country in terms of the SIR program. So use a portion of your narrative proposal to outline information about the scholar that you would like us to recruit. So we're using all of these items from your narrative proposal to reach out to our colleagues abroad. If you're, you know, naming two particular countries, we're reaching out to those countries to see if they would be able to recruit a scholar within that discipline or your subspecialization that you're requesting. So we're asking that you outline the credentials of the desired scholar that you would have to undertake that. If there's a certain amount of teaching experience they need in order to teach on your campus, if there's a degree requirement involved in order to teach on your campus, we would really need that information as well so that we can kind of narrow down our recruitment efforts for those, for that particular credential of scholar. And then if you have desired a desired discipline or grouping of disciplines as well as specializations or subspecializations, that helps us to craft a memo to our colleagues abroad and helps them to locate scholars that would best be able to undertake your grant activities. We get a lot of questions about whether or not your chances are better to name a specific scholar or request recruitment of a scholar. David, I don't know if you would like to.
Sure. I think historically we've probably seen more requests where scholars are actually named rather than the request for recruitment. But having said that, both types of proposals are perfectly fine. One is not prioritized over the other. You know, the one thing I would say is if you're asking us to recruit for you, please give us, you know, details. Think of, put yourself in the shoes of the Fulbright Commissioner, you as somebody that's going to do the recruitment. The more you can tell us in terms of what you would like, you know, the easier it's going to be for them to try and find someone that meets your qualifications. You know, and I guess to think realistically, you know, we've got a little bit of flexibility in terms of the kinds of courses that someone might teach. Think about that. You know, maybe you're talking about, you know, social sciences in general or humanities in general. You see, you might like a scholar who could teach X or Y. That's a good thing to think about because it gives the recruiter a little more flexibility in terms of who they might find that could meet your needs.
And then in terms of supplemental materials required for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, we have a section where you would upload letters of support for your institutional application. So this is different than the letters of recommendation. You included for the scholar, these letters of support would directly relate to your institution and what you're applying to do. So at minimum, we ask that you submit a letter from the responsible administrative official that you outlined in the application form. There isn't a maximum, however, so these would be, you would seek out letters from institutional representatives, so these might be people from different departments across your institution. They may be from individuals who are from neighboring institutions, so these could be higher education institutions, or if you're arranging activities for community outreach, this could be a good opportunity for those representatives to also include a letter of support. To be clear, like if someone is thinking about inviting the scholar for community outreach, this isn't like setting it in stone by them including a letter of support for your application. This would just be showing sort of the excitement that you're that other other colleagues in your institutional and surrounding community might have for having a visiting scholar on your campus. And also, a lot of times with other activities for the scholars, once the scholars actually arrive on campus, this kind of evolves and grows. Once the scholar gets there, then word gets out that the scholar has come on campus, and there's a lot more that kind of unfold as the scholar is there. But this is a good opportunity for us to see sort of the interest, preliminary even interest of other institutions in your area. We also ask that you include a sample syllabi or course outline. So if a scholar is teaching an existing course, we'd be curious to see what that course might entail. You don't need to include any sort of institutional policies here or boilerplate text. We just would like to get a sense of what the course might be about. If you're naming a specific scholar, perhaps you're already having these conversations of what the scholar might be able to teach. So you might also work with them to kind of enhance the course outline or syllabi based on what they might be able to bring to the table. All right. Now, once you've kind of made the decision to move forward with your Fulbright Scholar in Residence proposal, you may be curious to know what we're looking for as far as the review criteria once we receive your proposal and we bring in an external review committee to actually review those proposals. So we're looking that all of the components of your proposal are working together. All right, so this may seem like a simple concept, but just make sure that all of the pieces are kind of working together to make a whole picture or give us a whole picture of what you're hoping to accomplish through the Scholar in Residence program. So this would be like directly relating to like if your short and long-term goals are X, Y, and Z, how would having a scholar teach on your campus work toward these internationalization goals? They're not two separate goals, they're not two separate events. But do the, think about the teaching and curriculum development plan. Is the proposed plan, as I just mentioned, aligning with your short and long-term goals and objectives? Is it sort of feasible within the time period that you're looking to have a scholar on your campus? How does that complement other on-campus activities that might be going on? What kind of activities might that entail? What are the types of community outreach and engagement activities that you are putting forward? And what is the, or making sure that you're speaking to the suitability of the named scholar. So then the named scholar also has to sort of fit in to your overall plan of what you're trying to accomplish through the SIR program. And so important but not quite as important as the first four bullets, you're also looking at, we're also looking for campus support of the scholar. So we want to make sure that when the scholar in residence comes on campus, they're not just residing within one department, they're not just benefiting the one department, that they're getting out into the rest of the institution and really kind of creating a strong network across the entire institution. And then being sure to outline some professional enrichment opportunities for the scholar. Again, this is sort of widening the network of the scholar once they get on campus and once they get into your area. And then really taking time to think through the sustainability element. So how you'd be able to sustain what the scholar is bringing to the table. So might you have other professors on campus sitting in while the scholar's teaching and maybe learning some new insights into that particular area or aspect of what the scholar is teaching while they're there, or what other kind of activities might happen as a result of having a scholar on your campus. So as far as the review process and timeline, one important thing to note before I mention the due date is that we encourage institutions looking to apply for the Scholar in Residence program to submit draft proposals to us. So Alyssa and I will read through the draft proposals and we'll provide feedback based on what we've heard through our review meetings. That may help strengthen your proposal for the final submission. So I would definitely recommend, you know, using us. Use us as much as you'd like to answer any questions, to read your draft proposal, or even to just bounce ideas off of us as far as whether or not you're thinking if what you would like to accomplish through the SIR program might be appropriate or might be of interest to the overall goals of the program. We're happy to set up any kind of phone calls to discuss these elements that would, you know, kind of give you that nudge to submit your application in the end. So the application forms are due by mid-October. So this particular year, you get an extra day. So lucky all of you. So the due date this year is October 16th. And then once we have all of the proposals, we conduct a technical review of the applications. When we're doing the technical review, we're making sure that all of the components of the application have been included. We may be in touch with you if anything's missing or if we have any questions. And then we release the applications to our external review committee. They spend about a month reading through the applications. And then we have an external review meeting in early December to assess the proposals. And then after the review committee is completed in January, we are reaching out to institutional applications to notify them as to the review outcome. Also, concurrently happening between January and February would be that the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the State Department, as well as the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, would review any recommended proposals. While IIE, CIS, we are confirming institutional commitments to that particular program. From January to April, we're working to confirm the named scholars as well as to recruit scholars abroad. And then we are providing the host campuses with any recruited scholars for their consideration. So very important to know is that when we recruit scholars, we will send the candidate's information to the host institution, and you're making the final decision as to what's best for your, who would be best for your institution. And then from April to June, once we have all the confirmations and approvals, we will begin to issue the grant packets to the scholars. All right, so our application resources, as I mentioned before, we do have a wide range of resources available to you on the SIR landing page of the CIS website. So you can see the links here. So on the program page, we have a link to the application, which is through our Embark system. We also have a set of application guidelines. So this is a really good way. I'm sure we have a lot of institutional representatives on the webinar right now who are thinking that the SIR program might be a really great way to internationalize your campus, but you may have to get other administrators on your campus to sort of sign on to do this. So you may think, well, how can I express all and everything about the program to that administrator? You can present them with our downloadable PDF guidelines to outline what the SIR program is, and it provides a really clear roadmap through the application form as well as the narrative proposal components. It also includes kind of frequently asked questions, both in the guidelines as well as on the SIR webpage. So a lot of the questions you may be having may be similar to ones we've heard in the past. And if it's not, definitely reach out to us, and we're happy to answer those questions specifically. We have, so this is the first of a slate of webinars for this season. So this is the general overview webinar, but we will also have a set of webinars coming up for specific institution types. So we'll have a separate webinar for minority-serving institutions. We'll have a separate one for community colleges and a separate one for small liberal arts colleges and others, or small liberal arts institutions. And then we have a walkthrough of the application as well as an open call for questions. So by the time you're kind of starting this process, you may have questions or may want to hear about what questions other institutions have. So that would be happening in about mid-June. And then we have a final call for questions, sort of advising type session, about 1 month before the due date of the proposal. So those are all outlined on the SIR landing page, so I would definitely take a look at that. Send us the, your draft proposals. Also, you can go through the highlights tab of the SIR page to learn more about institutional and scholar success stories, or their just kind of impact stories in general. So that's another good resource that you might have. All right, so we also have other opportunities available to institutions. So Alyssa's going to talk a little bit about our Outreach Lecturing Fund program before we turn everything over to your questions.
Yeah, so the Outreach Lecturing Fund is similar to the Scholar in Residence program. It's also an institutionally driven application for a short-term program that's not only open to scholars in residence, but also our core visiting scholars who are here across the United States. So it gives the opportunity for you to invite a scholar to your campus for a short-term lecture for a day or a couple of days on any particular topic that you think would be of interest to your community on campus. So the scholars can meet, lecture, and exchange ideas with faculty, students, community organizations, and K-12 schools that have a special interest in international relations and exchange ideas. If you have a scholar in mind that you would like to invite to campus, you can go ahead and submit the application and provide their information. If you think it's an opportunity you'd like to take advantage of, but you don't have a scholar in mind, we do have a scholar directory list on our website, which you can take a look at and see their field of study, where they're located in the U.S., and sort of invite them to your campus that way as well. We've also listed the OLF email address, olf@iie.org. So if you have any specific questions about applying, what's acceptable, what's not, you're welcome to send an email to that address as well.
We kind of look at, you know, David works on the OLF program from the State Department side, so there are a lot of commonalities between SIR and OLF as far as the institution types that are reached through the program. So if you're wondering what it might take to host a scholar on campus, The OLF program is a really good way to sort of get your feet wet to see on a shorter term level what it might take to host a scholar while on your campus. You also might kind of be curious to hear about the experiences of specifically of a scholar in residence to see what might help to enhance your application or just generate that excitement among your community partners. So we do have some institutions that specifically like to invite our scholar in residence residences onto their campus, or if you're looking for a scholar from a specific country or you're interested in a specific area in that regard, you can search our directory by that particular country and then host somebody on your campus. So, David, I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
This is just a great program both for host institutions but also for the scholars themselves. You know, there are about 800 visiting Fulbrighters here every year. They're typically doing research, typically at Carnegie One classification schools. So we like to see them get to other parts of the country, to visit other kinds of institutions. It really enhances their understanding and appreciation for America and Americans. So it's a great opportunity for them, but also a great opportunity for you to do some very quick internationalization kind of thing by bringing that scholar to campus, you know, for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, engaging with your students, with your faculty, with the surrounding community. It really is a win-win, I think, for everyone. Particularly if you're a school that has not been particularly involved in Fulbright in general, it's a great way for that scholar to come to campus and for you to realize that you could be sending students, for example, to that scholar's country through Fulbright. You could be sending faculty to that scholar's country. It sort of gives you a broader perspective of what Fulbright's all about and realization that there's a range of things that you can do through Fulbright. Maybe this visit, this OLF is the first step that you might take to do that.
All right, so now, let's see. At this point, just kind of a few things on this webpage. You can see how to reach out to Alyssa and myself. And then we have David's information here as well. So, you know, definitely visit our website and see what's available for your particular institution through SIR as well as through OLF. You've participated in this webinar. Look forward to our upcoming webinars. Also, very importantly, we do archive the webinars for you. So if you would like other people on your campus to listen to the webinar to get a good sense of what it's about, or if you just would like to listen to Alyssa, David, and I over and over and over again, that is perfectly fine as well. We have our own fan club, perhaps. But, you know, definitely reach out to us and let us know what you're thinking as far as the SIR program. So very importantly, when our when the webinar is archived, it will also include the slides. So I know a lot of people are usually interested to know if they can access the presentation later. So as far as our questions go, we do have some questions that came in, so keep sending your questions in, and we're happy to answer them. The first being if, you know, our definition of scholar can include a creative artist. So we do have, you know, we do have various types of scholars who engage with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, including professionals and visual artists. So, David, if you could provide some insight about that particular area, or creative arts, rather.
Sure. The typical scholar, I think, is coming in humanities and social sciences, but having said that, we're virtually open to any field where there's value added for that scholar or from that scholar in terms of international perspective or comparative perspective that scholar brings to campus. We've seen a number of examples of people coming who were performing artists. We've had dancers, we've had drummers, we've had musicians of varying types, we've had poets, we've had a variety of people in a whole range of fields. So I think the key is what's that scholar bringing, what's the international perspective of what that scholar has to bring to campus is the key. I think it's the one area that we don't do as much with, perhaps it's the hard sciences. It's a little bit tougher to make a case that says, we're bringing in a chemist. What does that chemist have to bring to the table that wouldn't be provided by a chemist who's already here? But beyond high sciences, we've seen a whole range of subject fields that are fine.
Mm-hmm. So the next question we have is if the scholars' letters of recommendation come from their host institution or their home institution. So, you know, we're asking for people who could speak to the scholars' kind of credentials. I would say that if a scholar is, you know, getting this letter to talk about their teaching ability, perhaps that would come from someone from their home institution, or if they taught somewhere else at a different institution, that would come from there. But we would like to hear kind of a perspective outside of your particular institution, you know, because you're writing in the proposal as far as why the scholar would be the best one to undertake your grant. You know, you're having ample time to sort of address that. So this would give us a different perspective as to the suitability and the credentials of the scholar if the scholar asked for those letters from outside of your institution. The next question is probably our favorite one, and that is, can we invite a scholar from Cuba?
The answer is you need to be patient. Right now you can't. Fulbright is not open to Cuba yet. We hope that will happen sometime down the road. Surely we hope, but at this point the answer is no.
But at the same vein, aside from Cuba, there are some instances where we've had cases, so this is definitely if you don't see, as I mentioned before, don't see the country that you're looking for on the list of countries that engage with SIR, reach out to us sooner rather than later so that we can talk about the feasibility of that possibility. So we've in recent years had cases where we had a request for a named scholar, so usually they would have to be named, but we had a request for a named scholar from Guinea-Bissau, but we don't currently have a program in place there. So we were able, you know, David talked to his colleague in the Africa branch, and we were able to secure the assistance of our colleagues in Senegal, and they were able to confirm that particular named scholar. If there is a case like this, however, we would also encourage you to have sort of a plan B should it not work out or something along those lines. But again, as long as you're asking us sooner rather than later, we can kind of work through that feasibility early on in your application process to see if that might be a possibility. But that's, you know, kind of a good rule of thumb in general. If you have specific questions related to your needs, just to definitely let us know. All right. So, David, do you have anything else to sort of add about the program generally speaking, or about what you've experienced during the time that you've worked on the program that might be helpful?
I guess I would consider your application in the sense sort of a blueprint, which really sort of leads to the success of the program, because you had the opportunity to design what you would like. What will your scholar do on campus in terms of their specific teaching responsibilities? What will they do across campus, engaging with students and faculty beyond teaching? What will they do within the local community? So you're designing this blueprint of a sort, working through arrangements in advance, and whether you're naming a scholar or asking a scholar to be recruited, it really is a win-win situation because of the fact that you thought through in advance, how would this work? What would the scholar do? How would they benefit from the program? How would you benefit by them being here? And that advanced planning really makes this program tremendously successful.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like we don't have any other questions. If you have more questions that you would like, or if you would like kind of to talk more specifically about what you're thinking as far as the Scholar in Residence program, please do reach out to us by email at sir@iie.org. Keep an eye on the landing page for this webinar to be archived there, and we look forward to working with you in the upcoming months leading up to the October 15th deadline. So thank you all so much for taking the time to join us on the webinar today, and hopefully talk to you soon.